Welcome to Twisted Tendrils, the podcast where we give horrific writing advice. I am your host, Laura Nash. Welcome, everybody, to episode 9 of Twisted Tendrils, Horrific Writing Advice. Today we have a super special guest, Portia... Oh my gosh, I can't even say your name. Portia Simmons. Hello!
Hello, hello. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. So today's episode is Don't Just Be a Tortured Artist, Finding Your Bliss. Which I think is kind of relevant because I was in a Discord call with other fellow horror authors, and this one guy was like, if there's no pain, it's not real horror. Like, the artist has to be tortured. It's like, oh no! Why do you write then? So, before we get into that, let's do an intro. So, who are you, and why are you awesome, Portia?
Oh, wow. Well, I am Portia Simmons. I am a poet, essayist, occasional YouTuber, so I write all the things, and I think I am awesome because my superpower is to find my bliss and to recreate myself and give others the invitation to do the same.
Amazing. So, branching out of your normal genres, what are your three favorite pieces of scary media?
Oh, so I love the really old school, like the Alfred Hitchcock, the really yes. old school horror. That is my absolute favorite. And I love the psychological horror. I'm not huge into the like super gory on page or on screen, but the psychological I really like. I don't know if it's considered horror, but I really liked what Squid Game did as far yes. as kind of giving is because I like something to chew on and something to think about after the movie or the book is over. So I'd say that's the most recent thing I've really been loving. And every year on Halloween, we go to an old school movie festival that has the old school scary stuff. So like your Dracula and all that stuff. So
yeah,
that's what I love.
Old school is so good.
Yeah.
All right. So the big question. Do artists mm-hmm. need to be tortured souls?
No. I don't think we do. Now, it's funny, in my teenage brooding goth years, I did think that. And I spent a lot of time being very intentionally emo and sad as a young poet. but I don't think we have to. I think we can be happy and have our bliss, and we can still write things that challenge our readers.
For sure. So why do you think that stereotype exists?
Because I think that as writers and any type of artist, we feel things really deeply. And I think we have a lot of examples of tortured artist types. We have your Edgar Allan Poe, and we have Picasso, and we have all the people who were really tortured, and that's kind of our example of what the artist's life should be, what the writer's life should be. Mm-hmm. And if that's how you feel, that's valid, but we don't have to be tortured. Even if you write horror and thriller and suspense and all that juicy stuff, you can be a generally happy person and still thrill and horrify.
Amazing. So does art need pain to make it good? Another twist on this question.
I think art needs pain in the sense that flowers need rain. But okay. I think that there's enough pain in life. I think there's going to be ebb and flow in life. I don't think that we have to really try and attempt to be, you know, the tortured artist to bring that element of pain into the work, because I think, you know, out in the world, there's enough of that to draw off of. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, like, a lot of people say that art needs pain, but I think it's more art needs sacrifice to make it good, and sacrifice doesn't have to be emotional torment.
Mm. I really like that. Art needs sacrifice. It's so true. Any of us who have struggled with a writer's routine, or if people that get up early and write, you might not feel like it every day, but that's not necessarily torturous. It's a sacrifice that you make for the work, but it doesn't have to be, you know, just the old ball and chain. Sometimes, you know, when the alarm goes off, I'm like, do I want to write right now? But once I come to the desk and I sit down and I start to work, it, you know, I'm not upset at the work itself. Sometimes it's just whatever you're sacrificing. When you give up something, it can be an interesting balance, to say the least. But I think that's a perfect way to put it. Sacrifice. Wow.
Oh, heavy. So in one of the YouTube videos we had on your channel fairly recently was about, you talked about finding your bliss in writing. So what does this mean? What is bliss when it's paired with writing?
For me, finding my bliss in writing was not worrying so much about writing trends. I know that often it's good to have your pulse on what's being currently published, what people are reading and enjoying, but I think oftentimes we put some pressure on ourselves as writers to really, like, what are the people reading right now? What's really popular? And people kind of try to write to the trend and write to the times. And I find that if you're writing something that's really true to yourself and really is what makes your heart sing and is giving you that bliss that comes through on the page, and people are going to experience whatever you feel deeply, your audience is going to feel deeply. So I think finding the bliss in the work, even when it is work, and that can come from what you're actually putting on the page, and that can also come for me from the process. And I am not a morning person, so I don't get up early to write. I know a lot of people say, I've heard so many writers give advice to young writers, and they're just like, wake up when it's still dark outside. You need, like, it's dark, it's quiet, wake up at 4, do your writing.
I'll just stay up till 4. No, thank you.
I'm the same way. Like, if I'm up at 4 a.m., I haven't slept yet. you could get the same quiet at midnight that you can get at 4 a.m. So do the process that, you know, is going to make your life happier and easier. And that'll come through in the writing as well.
Mm-hmm. So how do you find what, like, there are many different aspects of writing, like many different genres, many different poetry, fiction, nonfiction. How do you find what you love to write?
I think try a lot of stuff. Get out of your comfort zone. Try some things. I think part of that is where being an avid reader comes in handy as a writer, because you'll come across things that you read and say, huh, I hadn't really thought about that as far as writing that as a genre, or I hadn't thought about that style of writing that type of thing. Like, for me, as a poet, it was years until I started really going into prose poems. I wrote entirely in verse, and I had a mentor to tell me, he's like, you wrote this thing. I wrote this thing. I was like, I don't know. Is this an essay? Is this a prose poem? I don't know. He loved it. He's like, this is really great work. You should look into this. So sometimes just doing something outside of your ordinary procedure will give you that idea. And as you branch out and try things, you'll find what makes your heart sing. And then you'll find the stuff that you absolutely don't love at all. And you don't have to write that. I joke with friends. I was like, I think I'm the only writer alive right now that doesn't enjoy writing YA.
Oh, goodness. Like, a lot of the authors on YouTube write YA, so I can definitely see where those feelings come from. But yeah, I was reading a writing craft book called The Anatomy of Prose by Sasha Black, And mm-hmm. one of the exercises she had in it was write a flash fiction. And I was like, what is flash fiction? And then that's what I mostly write now. It's like, oh, I fell in love. It's so fun. So, yeah. Not necessarily what you start with is what you're going to love the most, I think.
That's also true. And I think reading, like, craft books, craft magazines, I love Poets and Writers. I love Writer's Digest. They have great prompts and just ideas. I love the Paris Review. Just reading across a wide variety of stuff, you're not going to like everything you read, but it really gives you good ideas. You get prompts, and it gives you something different to think about. And even if you, and write something that sucks. If you, maybe you would have written a flash and was like, I don't love it. But you wrote something new, and you mm-hmm. learned something every time you step out of your comfort zone and write something different.
Exactly. You're a genius. Okay. So, what if what I write isn't popular and I don't think it'll sell?
Wow. What if what I write isn't popular and you don't think it'll sell? My answer to that is always a lot of my favorite writers who are currently no longer with us on the earthly realm were not popular when they were alive. One of my absolute favorite authors, Zora Neale Hurston, had a pauper's grave until Alice Walker got famous, got up enough money to actually get her a headstone. So she died penniless and was not popular while she was alive. And she's had this great resurgence, and a lot of her books, her unpublished manuscripts have been published now in, what, the 40, 50 years after she passed. So I'm not saying, just wait till you're dead. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, if you're writing from the heart, then you might not see the immediate pickup. You might not write something that's an immediate commercial smash success. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have warrant and that it doesn't have merit and it doesn't have an audience. And just remember that Stephen King threw Carrie in the trash can. His manuscript for Carrie, he threw it in the trash, and his wife found it and said, hey, I think you got something here. So
I love that story. It's like, yeah. Sometimes you can't see the value in your own work.
You really can't. And it's you have to have the courage as a writer, and that's, you know, a whole different episode, having the courage as a writer, but you have to actually just sit down, make the stuff, write it as well as you can write it, tell the story, and it may or may not be commercially successful, but that doesn't mean you don't have something to say that mm-hmm. is, you know, in the conversation. I have books I love that nobody has ever heard of. And commercial success is such a small part of what we get out of being writers.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think there's many definitions of success, and money is just one of them. Yeah, I think it's very important to have people like Stephen King's wife who are in your corner to help you see the value in your work, even when it's not commercially successful, but is successful mm-hmm. in other ways in helping you improve. Like, it's so nice to have support. And the next little subtopic is celebrating the wins, big and small. So, like, how do you go about that?
Sometimes the win, I break it up into micro wins. So, like, the really small wins. Like, for me, I am part of something called the London Writers, which is londonwritersalon.org. And they hold hour-long writing sessions at, well, they're all technically at 8 a.m., but in different time zones. So it's 8 a.m. New York, L.A., Sydney, Australia, I'm pretty sure, and one other that's not coming to mind. So my goal is always to write every day during the week, write for at least one of the writer's hours with them. So I celebrate that when I do. If it's like, hey, I did the 11 a.m. my time is, you know, L.A.'s 8 a.m. So I'm like, hey, I wrote for an hour at 11 a.m. even if I don't get anything that I can use, even if it's just an hour of editing, even if I just take out a couple of poems and start to plan how I'm going to revise, I celebrate that I sat down at the desk for that hour. So I think that's really helpful, is to look at it not in the sense of your end product, because if I go and wait for my end product, I won't celebrate, but maybe the 3 times a year I get something published. But if I celebrate that I sat down at the desk for an hour, or I celebrate that I found a great resource that I'm going to use, that all of those are wins. Everything that goes towards your writing process is a win. And I think you should celebrate all of them.
Mm-hmm. So how do you celebrate? Do you like physically get something? Do you just mentally give a cheer? Like how do you celebrate?
I actually have celebration songs. I have a celebration playlist, and I'll pick a song, which is usually like a really upbeat danceable song, and I give a shoulder shimmy, even if it's not like a full out dance. I give my celebratory shoulder shimmy, and I'll play a song amazing. I really like. Yes, and I love when it's older music, so shout outs to like 80s music, and I love like the really kitschy old school, like Eye of the Tiger or whatever. Like,
yes, that is awesome. Yeah, I haven't thought of doing that for my celebrations, because usually for National Novel Writing Month for NaNoWriMo, I'll usually do little wins like every 5,000 words or so, mm-hmm. and my reward will be I get to take a bath with a bath bomb, or ooh, I get a scoop of ice cream, or something like that, and then I'll get a bigger prize at the end, like I get to go out to a movie or something like that. So I like the dance. Although I think my favorite celebration I've ever done was I did FaceTime with my sisters and my nephew, who was 2, and we had a virtual tea party. So we each had our little teacups, and my nephew had his chocolate milk and his PB&J, and we had our fancy hats on, and we did a little tea party.
Yay, that is so adorable. I love that. I love tea. So I actually, that's one of my celebration things. If I have a bigger milestone, I'll treat myself to a special tea. So I'll get a loose leaf tea, because those are a little more expensive. So I'll go and get order myself a loose leaf tea if I do something really big.
Yes. Do you have any other advice for finding your bliss?
Finding your bliss, I think part of it is, which one of the things that's hard for me but so worth it, is get out of the chair and find things that you enjoy out in non-writing life and bring that in to your writing practice. Because if you don't go out, if you go out to your, find a tea shop in your area and find that you love tea, then that's a new thing. You love your loose leaf tea, and that becomes a reward, or that's something that's part of your writing practice, is to have your hot mug of tea or your incense, or maybe you like a certain place to take a walk. You have to kind of go out, get a little bit of non-writing life in, mm-hmm. and the things that give you bliss, bring that into the writing practice, and that helps. And also to get away from the page when you're stuck and kind of go out, do something different, or have a hobby outside of writing that blisses you out, and you bring that energy back, and it kind of feeds itself. So that's what works for me.
Ah, you're brilliant. I love it. Okay, so quick advice for writers. What makes good horror, or what scares you? Take your pick.
Oh, man. What scares me is I love realistic horror, and I love body horror. Because that's the stuff that creeps me out, that gets in my head and gets under my skin. Anybody that can write any kind of paralysis horror really well, or, you know, I read a story about someone that was, you know, they thought was dead, but the person could hear everything, but they just couldn't move. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I just, woo, it's delicious. Like, yes. The stuff that can really happen, I love it.
I was reading a Stephen King short story about a guy who was still alive, woke up on the autopsy table, like, can't move. There goes the autopsy. I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. So, yeah. Body horror can definitely be a fun ride to explore, for sure.
Yeah, and I found, and I don't have, oh gosh, I don't have any titles off the top of my head, but I found a couple of short stories that were from the perspective of a body part. So, like, from the perspective of a tooth that's going to be extracted, that was horrifying.
Wow, that's unique.
Yeah, so I really do like body horror, and I like, I found horror poetry not too long ago, maybe last summer. People are doing really interesting things in that space that is just, you know, because it's in verse, so it just has a different way of kind of hanging in the air, so that's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what is one thing a new writer, horror or otherwise, should keep in mind?
What a new writer should keep in mind is, as corny as this sounds, to be true to yourself. There is a lot of noise, especially with this wonderful thing called the internet and social media. I know that when I'm new at something, it is my first inclination to go follow all the people I can find to do that thing, which can be helpful in some situations, but to follow your own heart, your own bliss, and to tell your own story without letting what everyone else is doing crowd that out. So I would say, go old school, get a notebook and a couple of pens, and actually just sit down, handwrite as much as you can, and just see how you feel. That might not be what works for you, but for me, shut the world out. I just read an article about this as well. Get a couple notebooks, write longhand, turn your phone off. I love turning the internet off on my computer to write. I have an Alpha Smart that, you know, that doesn't connect to the internet. All you can do is write on the little screen, and you can get them really cheap from eBay. So, new writers, disconnect and write and see what happens.
Nice. sometimes I don't know what I was trying to spell when I don't have autocorrect. Yes. That is awesome advice. Just make sure you don't get a notebook that's so pretty you don't want to write in it. Defeats the purpose.
Yes. Also true. Like, get notebooks that you like, and they don't have to cost a ton of money. I love composition books, so for years, I just got, at the back-to-school sales, I'd fill my basket up with composition books and write in those. Now I found some slightly fancier ones on Amazon that I really like, that have like a table of contents so I can cross-reference stuff that I've written. But even those are just kind of plain cover, ruled notebooks that have maybe 156 pages in them, and just write, like, nothing fancy. You know, it doesn't have to have a really pretty cover. You want something that you just will go and pick up and tell the story, put the words down.
Amazing. Yeah. So, the final piece of the puzzle. Where can people find you and your work?
Oh, well, people can find me on, let's see, my Instagram is, oh geez, I'm bad at this. I don't use social media a lot. I know I'm Portia, at Portia Writes on Twitter, and I believe I am Portia Wordsmith. Yeah, at Portia Wordsmith on Instagram. And where you can find my writing is most recently on Substack. So that is portia.substack.com. I have a newsletter called Chronically Portia, and that is the intersection of creativity and disability. So check that out, where I will link to other things that I do. And if I can just give a really, really quick promo, I have an anthology coming out that I am a part of, from the Zora's Den Writers Collective, and it is a name that is blanking on me. My memory is also shot, so, like, ignore me. If you have notes for the podcast, I'll send you links
yes,
to put in the notes, because my memory is horrific. But I do have an anthology I'm a part of coming out, and I have the Substack. So those are the best ways to reach me is on Substack and Instagram and Twitter, and I reply to everyone.
Amazing. I hope you all enjoyed that wonderful interview with Portia Simmons. Next week, we'll be taking a deep dive into painting with horror techniques like dread, disgust, and terror. Not painting with paint, but painting with techniques. So, I will see you all next Friday, and remember, keep your writing spooky. You have been listening to Twisted Tendrils, Horrific Writing Advice by Laura Nettles.